Hello, I'm Gui.
I'm Afif.
And I'm Long.
And you're listening to Copy Overflow, a monthly podcast about software engineering. So this episode is my turn to talk about my career, apparently. Okay, so my goal is to like just share stories. I really don't have any like advice or wisdom to share, but maybe you can learn something from my stories and maybe my mistakes if I share them. Actually, to be frank, I was going through like stuff I could share. I was like, yeah, maybe I can't share that, or you know, I had to change and remove certain details before I could share, and maybe you could tell why later. Without further ado, let's jump in kind of like the start of my quote-unquote career. Okay, I'm gonna start like with my paid jobs. I won't start with like my proper full-time job. But the first paid job I actually did was... Actually, I wanted to start with a question, which is, have both of you worked in retail?
No, I've only been software engineer.
I've been a part-time in a supermarket. Does it count?
Yeah, I guess that's similar experience. The first paid job I got was actually working in Lao Yat as retail. So I would sell like accessories like hard disks, speakers, and all kinds of stuff. That was an interesting job because I know nothing about retail. I remember applying for the job, and during the time, a lot of my other friends, they were getting jobs at like McDonald's and stuff like that, where it's more like fast food chain restaurant. And because they work at food retail industry, they would get like food allowance or something like that, where basically they can eat McDonald's burger for lunch, right, if they work there and stuff like that. And I remember I dropped my resume at one of the shops in Lao Yat, and then the boss called me. I felt very dumb talking about this, but I actually asked them, and it's like, oh, do you have like food allowance? They're like, no, this is retail. Okay. The shop in Lao Yat was like way behind. It's not like those shops where when you reach up the escalator, you will find it. So it's usually like more towards like the quote unquote back alley in Lao Yat. But there's still like foot traffic. People still come in, ask about prices and whatnot. I don't remember whether I was asking my supervisor or they taught me without me asking was like how to generate invoice or receipt, because you have to like key in the item description, item number, and then print out the receipt and then give to the customer. That was later used against me in some way. They had a booth. You know, in Lao Yat, they have those like booth where it's just one person sitting and it's glass cabinets surrounding them, right? Like you go up the escalator, usually like they are beside the escalator where it's just a counter and then some guy sitting there and then selling stuff. Usually there is one person that handles the booth, but I think they quit. Like they wanted somebody there for a short while because they're going to stop renting the booth as well. Well, there's not a lot of people they can choose from. So they say, oh, well, you kind of know how to sell some stuff. You know how to like produce invoice. Can you go sit there for like 2 weeks? Okay.
They let you take care of the whole booth by yourself.
Yeah, by myself. And that place is like super strategic because it's the first one on your left once you go up the escalator. Yeah, that was scary as hell. There were a lot of soft skills kind of thing that my supervisor kind of told me about, or be more aware of when dealing with customer, or there are things you want to be mindful of when dealing with people from other shops, for example. Me as a naive person will come out and say, oh, everybody's my friend kind of thing. But yeah, like my supervisor gave me a lot of advice. Like, yeah, you want to be more careful about like, you know, how you do this and that. Like, yeah. So that was great. Next up, after that, in uni, I had the opportunity to kind of work for the IT department for a while as well. So I was kind of like an intern in the network and server team because it's something I really had interest in. So programming, actually for me during university, programming wasn't as much of an interest. I really like instead networking, you know, server stuff. I think mostly for one influence from my brother. Like he's very interested in those areas as well. That influence kind of rubbed off me. Yeah, so I did that. That was quite interesting because as being the intern, I get to do a lot of things they don't want to do. Like write documentation and backup the configurations. I wanted to tell this story where this was like so mind-blowing to me because, you know, like there's network cables running through all the office and all and go to the switch, and oftentimes it's not being labeled. So you sometimes don't know this office network port go to switch, which port, right? So what they have is that they have like a sonar type device. For example, in the office side, you plug one end of the thing, so it kind of generate like a signal all the way. So you take another device, it looks like a laser pointer of sort. Then you go to the switch and then you turn it on. Then it will act like a metal detector where it will start beeping. So the louder it gets means the nearer you are to the network cable. And then when you beep, 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 you reach the network cable where you plug the thing already. Yeah, it was interesting. It's like, wow, but the thing is not cheap. At the time, wasn't cheap at all. Now, I don't know, maybe there is a China knockoff equivalent.
I didn't know this metal detector has such use.
It's not like an actual metal detector. I'm just like giving an analogy. So you still have to plug in like emit like the signal and another thing to like kind of check where the signal is coming from. Because you imagine like campus network, right? There's so many rooms. The switch are like one floor has like 4 or 5 switch. You don't know where the cables are running to. Yeah. Also, yeah, hang wireless access points and all that kind of thing. That was fun.
What was your degree again? I've asked this long, long time ago, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I did computer science. Yeah, I think Long, you mentioned that last time you mentioned that you thought I did networking or something like that, right?
Yeah, because you seem to know all about network.
That was my interest, lah, so I somehow gravitated towards that field. So I get my first job in IT auditing. The reason why I stopped working in the IT department was I was going overseas to further my studies. Because I went overseas for my studies, I graduated there. One thing that happened was there was a Malaysian career fair where a lot of Malaysian companies were there overseas trying to like recruit talent that were going back to Malaysia. Because this tends to be like bigger, more well-known companies, like big telcos, big banks. At the time, I wasn't really thinking about what I want to do. I was more like, let's get a job. My first priority was get a job. I mean, as long as it does something like IT related or whatnot, I just get a job. I sent my resume to quite a few, but what I end up getting was IT auditing at a big four accounting firm. I guess I can talk about the interview process. First round, usually, as usual, the screening call with HR. The second round was interesting because I had to do the same test as like financial auditors. There was like math/IQ test. So I had to bring like a non-programmable scientific calculator. You remember those requirements?
I left that behind after high school.
Is this one of those Casio FX570 or something?
I mean, 570 and 350 we can use one. It's just that there's like one or two special grades one we can't use during like SPM and stuff like
that. As long as it cannot be programmed, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
as long as it cannot be programmed. So yeah, I did like math tests and IQ tests. And there was one behavior question at the end of the test. I won't talk about specifically the question, but it was basically a situational question. And then it's like, okay, write this email that you're going to respond to for this situation. I was like, oh, okay, interesting. So yeah, there was that. And then they let us know like after that, how was our scores and all. And then I proceeded the next round, which was to talk to the boss of the department, basically the senior director then. That was quite straightforward because I'm a graduate, right? There's not a lot of questions they could ask as well. So it's like standard, not standard, but like banter. And then it's okay, yeah, I got a job later. At that point of time, I have no idea what the job entails. I just wanted to get a job.
Totally relatable. I think everyone was at that position at the start, right?
Just apply for everything you can see.
After you graduate, you just want to get a job. You're not even thinking about career progression or anything. You just go in first, get some salary.
To support yourself.
I also applied to like a media company. And they were asking me during the interview process on like, oh, sell me this iPhone.
What? What position did you apply for?
It's all like graduate program kind of thing one. I was like, okay, I tried my best, but obviously I couldn't get it. So that was the only job I managed to land. So that was it. I did that. So yeah, IT auditing. I think probably a lot of people won't know what IT auditing is. So let me tell you what I could summarize from my 8 months there. There's a reason why I didn't stay there long, okay? But basically, IT auditing a lot of times is for one, a major part of it is to help financial auditors. A lot of companies now use financial system, right? They use digital accounting software and that sort of thing, right? So one thing we try to do is like a certain, for example, access controls to this sort of thing. Like they hook up to SSO, who has admin access, who is super powerful where they can change data inside the financial system. And we kind of get the list of all this. Were there any changes to who has admin access and that sort of thing? So that we can give confidence to the financial auditors that the data inside the financial system is actually usable. So I usually ask for like change of permission logs and the current admin, stuff like that, just to see, okay, who has access? Like, would this random person or random engineer have access? Is it being weird? That sort of thing. A lot of the other things I did was very much focused on systems as well. So for example, one interesting thing, well, I think it's interesting thing that I had to do was I had to trace a call. So you imagine your phone bill, there's a line item. Each call you make, there are lines, right? How long this thing is. And then depending on your plan, there might be a charge there or that sort of thing. There might be a value inside your bill, your itemized bill for your mobile plan. So one thing I had to do was trace from the tower because the tower actually has logs, trace from the tower all the way to their financial billing system that this call is exactly as long as what I show in the bill from the logs inside the tower all the way to like the bill generated. So it's like, I'll make sure they are charging to the correct amount they are saying based on the plan that is stated. So that's one thing I had to do.
For all calls?
No, one only because it's automated. So my sample size is only one.
Yeah, I thought you have to look at every line in the bill.
It didn't cross my mind that the tower have a lock of sort. I always thought that it's just like, it's at the end of the connection point where they lock the things. Okay.
Okay, so I talked about like helping the finance audit team ascertain the data that financial systems are trustworthy, they can use it. The second is like doing system stuff. The third thing is more like kind of a combination of both where you kind of look at, for example, is there another way we can audit certain things, right? We can't always use back the same audit methods throughout the years. Like, let's say I don't really want to go into like the whole accounting thing, but like revenue recognition, for example, how a company recognizes the revenue they receive. So sometimes when you pay for something, doesn't mean a company already recognizes the revenue. They don't count it as a revenue inside their books. So for example, like aviation, right, flying. You paid for the flight already, sure. But because it hasn't flown yet, the company technically can't recognize that as a revenue. They can only recognize that after they have flown, where risk and rewards has been transferred. This might be a bit boring, so I'm going to move away from this. But basically what I want to say is that part of the team I was in was that they would think of like, okay, is there possibility of fraud, possibility of money laundering? What are the other areas that we can audit to kind of ascertain and understand how each company works in more detail? It's very financial auditing related. So that's usually what seniors and managers do. So like if you're thinking like, I kind of talk about what IT auditors do already, but when you move up, you'll be doing more strategic kind of thing. Like, okay, how we're going to run the audit for this company this year, especially if it's like a big industry or big conglomerate where they have a lot of small companies. Like these are the things you have to think about together with the financial auditors. So yeah, I wasn't there for very long because frankly, the work wasn't very technical. A lot of times I felt I was annoying because every day I have to go like, oh, 10 o'clock, okay, let me go up and find Mr. A, Mr. B, Mr. C. I was like, can I have this document? Can I have that document? Can I have this document? Frankly, it wasn't the best position to be because it kind of feels like I'm annoying.
So were you doing that for that company only, or are you, is another company hiring your company to actually do the financial auditing?
Yeah, so I work for an audit firm, right? So there are a lot of companies engage the audit firm. Yeah, so I get like exposed to a wide range of industries like aviation, investment banking, and telco, and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
So up until this point in your career, you still haven't touched much about technical stuff.
Yeah. When you say technical, do you mean like software?
Okay, yeah, software. I mean, like we're talking about your career as a in software development, right? Yeah.
Are you like mind blown now? It's like, oh, go actually bamboozle us. He doesn't know anything about programming. Somehow we got conned by him. Are you amazed now by skill?
That means you pick up really quick.
But there is one story I want to tell specifically from this place was, I think this is very interesting. Even for me then, I was like mind blown. At the time, there was a weekly talent show where people are required to send in votes through SMS, which is being broadcasted. One of the jobs that was assigned to us was that we had to go to the place because it's digital, right? So basically, all they had was a web page showing the number of votes for each contestant. And then before the results were announced, they were supposed to screenshot that, print it out, and then use that result. So my purpose there was that to make sure the producers of the show were announcing the results accordingly, like who they voted out is the lowest number in the vote and that sort of thing. So I had to do that for a few weeks, which was interesting.
You need to do the verification?
Yes.
How?
It's a talent show on like national TV.
Yeah, live TV. Yeah.
So you have to do it live?
No, I'm at the backstage. Yeah, so they were like, for example, they say the voting will stop at 9:50, right? Or whatever time, right? So example time is 9:50. So I hope I didn't dox myself by saying 9:50. I actually don't remember the exact time, but yeah, like let's say the voting stops at 9:50. So the producer is supposed to come out to the computer, screenshot the thing, 9:50, print the thing out, and that's the result they'll be using already.
Right, so after that, it's no longer counted, something like that.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So you're there to like just need to screenshot precisely at 9:50 or?
Yeah, to make sure that they do that and the results they were announcing was as per what was screenshot and printed.
If the producer announced something different from the screenshot, what you need to do? Like you need to notify someone?
They won't usually. But to be frank, I really don't know. Maybe I'll call my boss up.
I didn't know they need like an audit firm to actually make sure that's true.
They need a third party.
Wow, okay. So I thought they were like, okay, just do it like internally.
Yeah, I also didn't know. It was what make it interesting. I was like, we do that? Okay. Yeah, so they usually ask like the guy juniors to go because like, yeah, it's usually late at night, these shows, right? So that was a very interesting experience. I specifically note it down, right? Because it was unexpected as well. So I was like, I guess a fun fact to share. Okay, so, you know, the job wasn't technical and all. So I started looking for other jobs. So as I mentioned earlier, kind of like, you know, networking has always been my interest. So that's what I wanted to do. And somehow or other, I managed to find like I wouldn't call it a management training program. But actually, I don't remember the exact term they use. Maybe it's graduate program as well. I can't remember. But it's something similar to that where they hire like a pool of people, which was including me, and they kind of want to try to train them up, bring out into the field, and hopefully within like 3 to 5 years become consultants where you can do like pre-sales, which is before sales happen, or RFI or tender, and also post-sales implementation. So they kind of want to grow talent in that area. I don't know where to start. There's so many things that happened. Like, I would say this period of time was like my most growth in terms for me, even though like a lot of the knowledge I don't use nowadays, but I definitely learned a lot from like a very good senior. Maybe I can talk about this and maybe here's something that, you know, you the listener can learn from as well. Okay, so let me I don't know where to start because I don't give so much context, right? Because I'm assuming like a lot of listeners would probably be, I'm not saying they're dumb lah, but they probably have a limited understanding like you, Long and Afif, on like how does the infrastructure world kind of works, right? So I kind of have to like lay it with a lot of context as well. Do both of you know Cisco?
Yeah,
but
no, as in like
to what extent? Yeah.
Cisco is like a networking, they sell networking devices, right? Routers and switches. Cisco has their own certification program.
CCNA, CCNP.
Yes. I mean, Long knows, which is good. Okay, so at the time when I joined, there were like 20-ish, close to 30 of us, right? After like a few weeks of technical training and soft skill training, we kind of get moved off to like different teams. So very luckily, I definitely say very luckily, is that I got moved to the data center storage team. So the job scope of that team was mostly data center switching. And yes, there is a difference between how switching is done in data center and how switching is done in like a campus, like a university. They are very different design patterns and very different.
The topology is entirely different, basically.
Yeah, basically different. And besides data center networking, there was like server stuff, storage stuff, and everything in between. So at that time, the senior, he wasn't a team lead yet, but he was kind of team lead already because he was the only senior engineer working on data center and storage. So he was preparing for like the expert level Cisco certification program. Now, I'll give some story on how, not cutthroat, but how tough it is, where the expert level certification requires two tests. First one is like a computerized test where you, I think, few hours, you answer questions in a computer. That's fairly straightforward. The second part of the test is an 8-hour lab. And I think things have changed, but I'm saying this based on my knowledge 5 years ago, which is at the time there were only 8 labs in the world where you can take the exam. And what the exam consists of is actual devices where you have to go and configure and also troubleshoot things. So my senior at the time was studying to pass this exam. He already failed once already. So he was like trying to prepare for the second time and prepare for like going to Australia because Australia was the nearest one to us.
So he went to Australia and he failed. Like those money are burnt already and then have to come back, study again and go again later.
Yeah. It's quite normal to not pass on your first time.
What kind of expert exam is this? One level higher than CCNP or something?
Yes, one layer. One level higher. OSI layer.
Yes.
That was tough lah. So because he was preparing for his exam again, a lot of times when he was teaching us or telling us to do things, he would always ask us like, okay, when you configure something, how do you know this is what you configured? How do you check? How can you verify your configuration? Because like in the exam setting, for example, whenever he's doing something, he needs to double check what he's done is correct. Then he needs to make sure that there's no like, not bugs lah, but there's no like misconfiguration or it's kind of working as expected. There's no weird behaviors. So every time he like asks us to do things, it's like, sometimes he will teach us something and then he will like ask us, so how can I verify this? Like, it still sticks with me because even now when I write tests, for example, it's like, how can I verify the code that I've written is tested or testable or in whatever level? That's the thing that kind of stick with me. Oh, another thing that I just thought of from the same senior as well is like a lot of times we keep saying, not we lah, but people keep saying like, you know, find out what you love doing and you know, do what you love doing. The time my senior's approach was more like, find out what you don't like and don't do it. There was a time where he was like involved in wireless stuff because the wireless team is also very small and they needed people. That was like before he became a senior engineer lah, so he was helping out a lot of other teams. So he was helping out this project in the wireless team doing site survey and all. And then he told me, from then on, I realized I never want to touch wireless network again. And true to his word, he never touched wireless again. So he gave reasons why he didn't like it lah. For him, he's always like, find out what you don't want to do and never touch it again. Which I think is also a good way. Like if you don't try, you don't know, right?
It's equivalent of like web development, like someone saying, oh, I don't like X framework, I will never do the X framework again.
He's finding out what he likes, but through elimination.
Yeah, through elimination. Somehow that story stuck with me. I could think about like how to do stuff and then like, oh, I don't like this, I don't do it anymore. One of the very fortunate thing is also when I joined the team, they were in the middle of working on a data center refresh plus disaster recovery. So basically the whole project was this company was refreshing their data center. So they have like a new data center switch and server and storage. And then they also are building a disaster recovery site, which is offsite from the building they are in. And then as part of that, I have to like migrate VMs from their old data center to their new data center, which is just like one cable across, which me and my colleague pull. Even though I joined in the middle, but it was still a very early stage of the project, I get to experience a lot of things doing like the migrations and also running disaster recovery drill. Actually, everything I know about disaster recovery drill came from there. Engage the IT team of that company to do stuff, we do stuff, and then the application team comes in and verify application and all that sort of thing. It was both a very big project and I learned so much from it. That project went on for like a whole year. Actually, I think my first year was just doing that. Okay, so after kind of like my first year, somehow rather because they wanted more talent on data center, I somehow got shifted to like a consultant role. My focus was still on post-sales implementation, but sometimes I'm requested to do pre-sales. If there's tender, I have to be involved and contribute technical writings for the tender or RFI or RFQ or whatnot. So yeah, my job scope kind of expanded. But during the time, because I'm still very much focused on post-sales implementation, which means like I go down and do project, I still kind of like it. Like, because I told my manager, look, if this role change results in me not doing projects, I don't want to do it anymore. Because I still want to do hands-on work. But that was quite fun as well.
But until now, your role is still like a network engineer, basically, right?
Yes, it's still infra, very infra-heavy. A lot of like VMware and storage. Long, are you like, I feel like, so when's the software engineering part coming in?
No. I'm just trying to like make clear like, I'm trying to visualize the story you've been telling so far. I'm trying to follow along.
I kind of noted this down because I felt like there was also like a turning point. Well, sort of a turning point that didn't happen was because I was working in projects, there were actual project managers. And one of the project managers I worked with, like she was really good. And because of that, she got promoted to become a project management lead. But because she got promoted, she got very, very busy. And after that, she left the company. When she left, I was very fortunate because I asked her for like half a day, can you run me through start to beginning of a project? So she told me like, okay, in the beginning, you need to do this. If it's a bigger company, you need to prepare like steering committing slides, what you need to do when you prepare meeting minutes and that sort of thing. Like all these are scope of project managers. So to be frank, it's like if she stayed, I would probably have been a project manager actually, because it was something I was very, very interested in. And yeah, we probably wouldn't met and this podcast wouldn't exist.
Didn't know you're interested in project management.
Yeah, because again, I think it was because I really met the quote-unquote right person. Like she was very good at her job and also she was very willing to teach. And I think if I moved, I would have a place that I could grow. Like someone was there to help grow me. But because she left and I don't see like any point moving. So I was like, yeah.
The saying is really true. Like people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. Or rather they leave pick up the lack of managers.
But yeah, everything she taught me, I later use as well on my individual project. So because of everything she taught me during the session, I can do billing as well. I know how to do billing, go to my finance and bring letter to like the project owner in the client's company. It's like, yo, project finished already, sign off UAT please. And then this is the bill to your finance, pass to them, thank you. Because a lot of the projects at the time I was doing was one man project. They aren't big projects, but they are like smaller projects where I do on my own. I'm not boasting or anything. A lot of times it was very stressful to be frank.
Your one-man show, basically. So you manage the work and then you do the work.
Yes. Sometimes in bigger projects, juniors will come and help out. But yeah, so after a while, nearing towards the end of my career at this company was when I realized a few things. For one, I started getting a lot more challenging clients. They were kind of very demanding and very, I don't want to use the very difficult to work with, but basically that was it. And I've worked with multiple clients already. So yeah, I wasn't having a very good experience with some of the clients. And one thing that really told me to like shift industries was I was working in this project. And then it was basically a kind of a data center refresh as well, like new servers, new storage, hook up to your existing network. Okay, so one thing that was happening during that time was that hosted services started becoming more of a thing already, where you can kind of rent like storage and compute, like how you will rent EC2s basically. I was talking to the head of like infra in IT, and as I mentioned, hosted services were starting to be a thing there, and I did know that one of the things they considered was moving to hosted service. And then what the person told me was that they chose like a on-premise data center refresh was because they didn't want to lose their job. To be frank, that kind of like, oh, I don't... This person is totally entitled to what they say, right? I totally have no problem with it. But to me, it's like, yeah, it feels like the industry isn't moving and I can't see myself keep doing the same things for the next 3 to 5 years. I kind of want to move. It also worries me a lot when people at a higher level are saying this. It feels like they're not being strategic about how they want to move their organization. Because to me, if you move to hosted services, for example, and you like go through your compliance approval and legal approval and whatnot, won't it save a lot more time than having to maintain your own infrastructure? You can focus your effort on somewhere else. That was what I thought personally, la. So I'm like, okay, it's time to move. I remember the exact moment where I applied the company where I met both of you. It was in a McDonald's. I was having lunch. I was strolling through Job Street. There was this job for operations engineer, which have tons of words that I don't know, like Docker. Was it New Relic? I'm like, you know what? I don't qualify, but I'm going to apply. So,
okay.
Yeah, somehow or other, the recruiter called me. I'm like, oh, okay, sure, I'll come on site for an interview. And I remember going, I can briefly talk about the interview questions, I guess. For one, I don't think they're using the same one, and I'm going to be general enough that it's not related to the actual question. But I remember going in, and then the question was like, oh, use Docker to do stuff. And to be fair, I was panicking already. I've seen this Docker word online, but I never use it in my job at all. So it's like frantic Googling. At the time, I was like, I don't think I'm going to pass this interview, but let's just try my best. And somehow after tremendous Googling, I managed to like convince my interviewers I meet the bare minimum requirement. Long stop laughing.
It's a good story.
I was sweating throughout the interview. You have no idea. So that was my experience. I managed to do the end of day presentation and like I said, convince all the engineers that I think I know something. And then it was the second. Oh, the second round was even more. Oh, man. So the second round for operations engineer was use AWS to do some things. And I never touched AWS before. One saving grace. I asked the head of engineering then, could I use online code? Then he was like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And I think that was the saving grace because I have to look up for like Node code that can do the things that I want to do. I have to change some stuff, of course, but I had to do it on AWS. So I used Lambda to do it. Again, first time touching Lambda, panicking as heck. Find some Node.js code, copy paste. Things not really working. I need to change the code a bit. It's like, okay, there was one bug.
Wait. You learned Lambda on the interview day?
I wouldn't say I learned. I just got it to do what I wanted it to do. Okay, I know about Lambda. I know it's like function as a service, but besides that, I don't know much about it. So that was the start of my operations engineer role. I actually quite liked it. So I think it was kind of like a hybrid thing because they were looking for engineers that have like VMware knowledge as well. Because at the time, there was some hosted things on VMware, and then there was also some things on AWS. And for me, it was nice that I can actually know what AWS is now, actually use Docker now without sweating much.
You're progressing.
Oh my God. Around this time as well, I read the Phoenix Project. And from someone who come from infrastructure and experiencing all that, you think Phoenix Project is a fictional tale? No, there are some companies still today are still like that. So you'll be surprised, actually. So that was also like a mind-changing thing for me, like reading the Phoenix Project. I would definitely recommend it as well. We are not sponsored, unfortunately. See. So yeah, I kind of worked from operations. And then I think after like a year, I kind of asked my manager, I kind of want to pick up more on software engineering, like be more like a developer. So he said, yeah, there's another team that requires people. So he moved me around and started doing more developer stuff. I still do like operations, but it's a mix of that and also like actual feature backlog. Yeah, not long after that, the head of engineering came to me and said, hey, do you want to be an engineering manager? I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. I know it sounds really uneventful, but it is what it is. Like in our one-on-one, he's like, hey, you just want to be an engineering manager? I look at him, I think for 2 seconds, sure, why not?
It's usually uneventful like that.
You're trying to find what you can eliminate based on what your senior engineer used to say, right?
Yeah.
Are you touching management again?
I don't think I will touch managing again. I believe we have a more qualified person last episode to talk about it. I haven't done engineering management for a while already. So, and I learned a lot through that experience as well. For example, it's probably one thing that I won't go back and do it. Go back to do.
The biggest takeaway.
Yeah, I was there for 3 years in total. So I told myself I would try engineering management for 2 years. And then I was like, at the end of it, like, isn't exactly what I want. One consideration was because engineering management's dopamine hit cycle, where you like get things done, isn't as quick as an engineer's. Like you can close the ticket. Once you close the ticket, there's a dopamine hit, right? Oh, I close the ticket. Oh, I fix a bug. But a lot of times engineering managers, at least for me, is a lot of like work in progress things. Like culture is always a work in progress. There is never a done state. Hiring is always a work in progress. There's never like we have the perfect hiring, it's done now. There's no such thing, right? And working with your engineers and trying to help them grow is always a work in progress thing. Unless they leave, then that's actually done.
Oh my God. That's a negative done.
Your definition of done is making them leave?
No, that's that. Wait. Let me rephrase. Actually, I shouldn't say done, but rather it's more like focus. Instead of focusing on their growth inside the company, I have to think about their growth outside the company already. Yeah, depends on some engineering manager like don't really care once they leave, but sometimes it's good to like keep in touch and see what they're doing. And you know, if they ever need a referral, they know who to look for. Is there anything, any questions or anything you guys want to bring up?
Like, there's so many questions. Like, how do you go from like, I don't know, some lao yet booth to network and then to sysops, then software, and then EM, then back then IC. I don't even know where to start.
I just told my entire story. Long, were you not paying attention? I just told my entire life story.
I don't even know where to start to ask. Okay, maybe like one question I can think of. Because earlier you mentioned like, if you're not more interested in networking, right? After you switch role, did you ever consider going back?
I had a catch up last year with one of like my old colleague, and I still feel the industry is still very much where it is right now. Infra exists because they're either on-prem. Why would they buy server and storage if they're not doing on-premises, right? Because from an engineering perspective, you'll be using hosted services already. So it's very much tied to that. And also, it really depends on where you worked in. Whether you are working in the end user, or previously I worked in a reseller or system integrator, as they call them. One of the main reasons is that it's very hard work, to be frank. I have to do a lot of migrations in the graveyard shift one. Like sometimes I have to, okay, I wake up at 2 p.m. because yesterday I was working until like 4 a.m. Right, I woke up at 2 p.m. and then I have to go on standby on site at 10 p.m. and then start work at 12 p.m. and then work until like 4 a.m. This happens a lot of time, which is, for example, why banks have maintenance hours, right? For anybody to do this sort of work. Yeah, and probably you're saying, oh, I mean, we have like no continuous blue-green deployment. And sometimes it's not as easy, especially when you're doing like lower level stuff like hardware and server and storage. Sometimes it's not as easy. Graveyard shift was one. Just couldn't see myself keep doing that. And I also didn't want to work in like a pre-sales kind of role and like write tender and RFI and that sort of thing. I always want to do something more technical. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. That's, your experience is so diverse. Do you see any like one or two transferable either like skill or knowledge that you still keep between these diverse jobs? Yeah.
I think mostly it's like soft skill and communication. Some technical skills are transferable, but it's more like process related. I think I mentioned earlier, like because of the project that I did disaster recovery exercises, I know like how to run disaster recovery exercises, that sort of thing. But mostly it's like communication skill, how you talk to people. Different roles require different kind of persona. So for example, right, when I was a infrastructure engineer, when I go on site, sometimes client will want something that isn't really in scope, but usually it's not a very big thing. So a lot of times I would like, okay, I'll help you. Like, you know, can you write an email first requesting you want us to do this? And then I'll say, all right, I'll do A, but I won't do B. And then because, you know, I need to show to my boss that we can't do everything for you free. And if anything else you want, it has to be billable. Right? There's a lot of like this push and pull kind of thing. Kind of like know how to communicate with different kind of stakeholders at different level. Because when you're talking to a CTO versus a kind of like an infra engineer and a head of infra, the details varies, right? Especially sometimes when there are incidents and then it's like, you know, finger pointing already.
I think the business domain or like the business knowledge is also something valuable. I felt like as you move further up the software engineering skills, I think knowing the business domain that you're in is actually very, very beneficial, actually. If you're in this industry, then you know the industry's terms or something like that. And
the jargons and whatnot.
Yeah, the jargons and whatnot, and then how stuff are done.
You could probably not use some of your virtualization knowledge we use and some networking stuff. No?
Like AWS, for example, AWS has simplified a lot of this already.
Yeah, even the networking stuff is like...
They do have their private network and stuff like that, but you don't really have to think too hard about it. Yeah. Unless you are doing like a public-private cloud kind of connection, like you want to connect AWS to your on-prem stuff, right? That's like more complicated. And then if you have like an active data center and then you want to hook up with AWS, these are where the more complex things come in than you want to think about.
In the job where you help set up the infra and facility for the... Did they offer you like the discount or something to take the Cisco test?
Yeah, so they have tiers. I think AWS does this as well, but there are tiers on, like, you know, if you are a Cisco partner, if you have so many CCIE, so many CCMP, so many CCNA, you get like a certain tier, like your platinum tier or whatnot, then you get a lot of discount from reselling. So let's say like highest tier, maybe you get 25% off list price. So that's a motivation for resellers to get their engineer certified.
So do you get...
Yeah, I was in the initial technical training. They were like, yeah, make sure we're going to do CCNA training now, do your certification, do CCMP now, do your certification. I never do the expert level because that is like way too... I wanted to focus more on, like, for example, VMware. So VMware, I really went professional level equivalent. The expert level, you have to come up with a design and then you have to present to a board of examiners and then you have to defend your design choices against this board of examiners.
It's like PhD.
Yeah, it's practically like a PhD defense. So it's like, oh, that's way too much for me. No. Plus, I only have like 2-3 years experience. I don't have an interesting project to use as a basis to showcase.
Oh my God, that's so hard. Okay.
Yeah, if I work longer and then I get like a big project that does a lot of interesting things, then I can use that probably maybe as a defense.
I'm asking because like back in my university, I was like 1 3-credit course on networking, like introduction to networking. I was thinking about taking CCNA. Then I just looked through the syllabus like, nope.
Nope, as in what? Why nope?
I don't know. More than half of that, I'm not gonna take that.
It's quite interesting, lah. You know, learn IP addresses and all. Although I don't use, practically barely use any of the knowledge from last time. But
I still barely understand CIDR notation.
Oh, last time we had to know by heart one. My senior were like randomly quiz this thing /28. What is the range? I was like,
no Google.
What? Seriously? Oh, okay. Oh my God. Yeah, I have no idea.
Again, like I said, he was preparing for his exam, right? So all these things need to come instantly because 8 hours fly by so fast.
And when you're on site, you don't get to Google stuff.
I mean, we can still open up the talking about... another story for another day. Okay, I hope this episode is interesting in some ways. I really don't know. Feels like a bit of mess. But yeah, hopefully it's interesting. I talk about my Laoyat stories and being an infrastructure engineer. Yeah, I really skim on the like software engineer and engineering management part because I feel we have a more qualified and more current person working on it. Like if you haven't checked it out, check out the episode 18, Mehdi's episode about engineering management. And we almost always talk about software engineering anyway. So I was thinking like bring a twist to this episode. I guess we can wrap this up. All right. So follow us on Twitter, Copy Overflow. We are also available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and also Spotify. And don't let your copy overflow.
Yay.